The truth about vaccines. April 22nd, 9 p.m.
About vaccines. I'm your host, Ty Bollinger. Now, you may recognize me from documentaries that I've produced in the past on the subject of the truth about cancer. A natural progression was to investigate the truth about vaccines and bring awareness to that topic as well. And that's exactly what we've done. I truly believe that the next 7 days are going to change your life. And I look forward to going on this journey with you. So let's go ahead and get started. It's a commonly held belief that people, including doctors, are either pro-vaccine, in other words, they believe that all vaccines are safe and effective for all people all the time, or anti-vaccine, in other words, 100% against all vaccines all the time. But is this accurate? Are these the only two legitimate positions about vaccines?
It's absolutely ridiculous to even talk in terms of pro or anti-vaccine. The reason why is that it would be like talking in terms of pro or anti-antibiotics. So you can know that it's absolutely wonderful to have access to antibiotics when you need them, when they're being used appropriately, when there's a bacterial infection that an antibiotic can really help beat. That doesn't mean that you would prescribe an antibiotic for a viral infection. But somebody, a doctor or a parent who didn't want an antibiotic for a viral infection, you would never call that person anti-antibiotic, right? So when people are questioning vaccine safety or vaccine efficacy or vaccine necessity, that does not make them anti-vaccine. That makes them pro-science and pro-common sense and pro-public health. The truth is, we all care about the same thing. We care about having healthy children and a healthy population. Nobody is anti or pro-vaccine. We are all pro-kid and pro-health. And questioning certain aspects of our current CDC vaccine schedule is actually really important if we want to make sure that our kids are safe and healthy.
I agree with Dr. Margulis. We all care about the same thing. We all want to make sure that our kids are safe and healthy. That's it. I think we can all agree on that, right? This docuseries will be focused on the scientific integrity of vaccine studies, the safety and efficacy of about a dozen particular vaccines that are in the CDC's current schedule, and the vitally important topic of vaccine freedom of choice. I don't want my opinions to get in the way of scientific facts, nor do I want to influence anyone to do anything against their own conscience. My goal is to present the truth so that you, the viewing audience, can make an educated decision for you and your own family. What's the theory behind vaccines? I asked Dr. Paul Thomas, a board-certified pediatrician from Portland, Oregon, this very question.
What is the theory behind vaccines? Why do they work, or what's the theory behind why they work?
Well, before I get into that, I just want to mention what we've lost in this whole vaccine discussion is that what really keeps us healthy is a strong immune system, all right? Now, having said that, is it possible to use your immune system and promote some aspect of it so you develop immunity against something that might be causing harm? And I think the theory of vaccination goes way back to smallpox, cowpox, Jenner, and you know all those pioneers. And they were able at that time to take a little bit of something that was causing disease or that was similar to it and get it under the skin and get your body to mount an immune response so that in the future, when you got exposed to smallpox, let's say, your body was ready and ready to go, right? So in a simplistic term, I think that's what we're trying to do with vaccines. We're trying to prime the immune system with the organism that's been killed or pieces of the organism that's enough to for the body to recognize it. And you develop antibodies so that next time you're exposed, your immune system reacts quickly and you don't actually get sick. So you'll have a huge immune response. And, you know, to some extent, we've been successful, but where we've lost, you know, we may have won a battle, but we've lost the war, in my opinion, is the collateral damage.
We will be looking at the collateral damage, to use Dr. Thomas' exact words, over the next week. Vaccinations are credited with a reduction and even elimination of several diseases, including whooping cough, diphtheria, tetanus, polio, measles, mumps, rubella, hepatitis B, smallpox, meningitis, and influenza. If a person develops a positive antibody response following a vaccination, then that vaccination is considered to be successful, and that person is believed to be immune to the disease. We will address this topic, antibodies, in the next episode.
I am a member of the Academy of Pediatrics. We're supposed to be the Academy of Pediatrics, the organization that, you know, guards the health of children. And when it comes to vaccines, which is what we're going to be talking about, I feel like the Academy has not been as thorough as perhaps I would like them to be in investigating what's going on.
That really sums up the reason that we produced this docuseries. We need more investigation, we need more discussion, and we need more honest debate. But the two diametrically opposing positions of those who are pro-vaccine and those who are anti-vaccine have resulted in a climate where civil discussion rarely takes place, where there's much more name-calling and pejoratives. This has created a climate that is not conducive to true debate or discussion.
In today's climate, you have the get your kid vaccinated now. And then you have a growing climate of don't vaccinate your kid. Now, neither standpoint allows for owning a decision and understanding why you make that decision.
The moment you question the safety of vaccines, you are a quack. The moment you bring up any issue with safety, you could be pro-vaccine, but if you bring up one safety issue, you're automatically a quack. We have Nobel laureates who've brought this out, right? These are Nobel laureates, and suddenly they're being called quacks,
right,
and idiots and crazies because they're questioning the safety of vaccines.
I think it's one of the most disturbing facts of our time that you can't even speak to the thing, you know, the basic facts like vaccine inserts that state that all of these potential harms are possible and have been observed previously, and you can't even speak to them without being called an anti-vaxxer, whatever that's supposed to mean.
If we look back in history, we'll see people like the Italian astronomer and physicist Galileo. He was convicted in 1633 for publishing his evidence that supported the Copernican theory that the Earth actually revolves around the Sun. Galileo was actually called a heretic for his anti-scientific, heliocentric, in other words, sun-centered, views, and he was sentenced to house arrest, where he remained for the rest of his life. Now, we later learned that Galileo's scientific theories were actually correct, and that the orthodox scientific community of his day was dead wrong. Over the next 7 days, we're going to present expert testimony, scientific studies, and medical data in as concise and understandable manner as possible, so that you can make wise decisions based upon informed choice. A big part of making wise medical decisions is the concept of informed consent.
The idea behind informed consent is that you, whenever you do a medical procedure, you have to talk to the patient about the benefits of the procedure, the possible complications with the procedure, and the other options that you may have. So with vaccinations, you have to talk about what are the positives of vaccinating your child, what are the potential negatives of vaccinating your child, and what are the alternatives. And one of the alternatives always has to be not vaccinating or spacing out the vaccines. And the problem is that doctors are incredibly busy. They're getting, you know, they have less than 15 minutes in the office with a family. They hand them a piece of paper that comes from the CDC. That's not informed consent. That's not really saying to them, okay, look at this is what really, this is really the pluses and minuses. And the problem is that most doctors in America haven't actually taken the time to do the fundamental research that they need to do to figure out what the true risks and benefits are of any given vaccine. So in this country, we don't really have informed consent when it comes to vaccines.
There's a term that I remember vividly being taught in medical school, and that's iatrogenic. So iatrogenic is caused by what we do. All right. If you take
what a doctor does.
Exactly. So if you take a medicine that I prescribe and it makes you ill or causes you harm, that's iatrogenic. All right. And I think we've lost our way in looking at vaccines and looking at what are the iatrogenic effects. In other words, what harm is being done by our vaccine program? So, you know, I wrote this book, The Vaccine Friendly Plan.
Because just to be, so people know, you're not anti-vaccine.
Absolutely not. So the dilemma I was in 2008, after I had those four cases of children who regressed into severe autism, and I'd already learned about toxicity. I'd read studies on thimerosal, on aluminum toxicity. I mean, there's books on this topic. I could no longer ethically keep doing vaccines business as usual with the CDC schedule. And the things that concerned me the most were that hepatitis B dose for newborns. Back then, they weren't pushing vaccines on pregnant women. That's happened since. And the sheer number of vaccines that were being given, for example, at the two-month visit, we were giving six different vaccines, three of which had too much aluminum. So you're multiplying huge toxins, adding on top. And it was just clearly not a scientifically justifiable approach when you understand toxicity.
If you're going to give parents informed consent before they take these vaccines, don't just tell them that the vaccine was responsible for lowering the incidence of cases of measles. Tell them that there are studies that if you take this, showing that if you take this measles vaccine, you're statistically significantly more likely to be hospitalized after receiving that vaccine. Okay, you're more likely to have epileptic seizures. You're more likely to have allergies as a result of that vaccine. Okay, that's well documented. You're more likely to develop cancers and heart disease in later life if you've taken that vaccine, because it has suppressed you from being able to develop those protective effects that you gain when you are exposed to that disease naturally as a child. So if you want informed consent, you have to have all of that information, access to all of that information, so that then you can make an informed decision, and then you have to be free to accept or reject vaccines.
According to the CDC, there is no federal requirement for informed consent regarding immunizations. For state and local regulations, you need to check with your local or state health department. So this is a 10th Amendment issue, since the 10th Amendment states that all powers that are not specifically given to the federal government are the responsibility of the states.
Whatever was not defined in the Constitution as a matter for the federal government defaults to the states. Public health laws are state laws. Vaccine laws are state laws. Now, the federal government has to protect the borders. So they can make laws about people coming into the country who have infectious diseases or who are not vaccinated, right? But in our country, it's the states. That's why you have different vaccine laws in different states. Different states have different exemptions. Right now, 50 states have medical vaccine exemptions. 47 states have a religious belief vaccine exemptions, and 16 states have medical, religious belief, and a third exemption that's worded as either a conscientious belief, philosophical belief, or personal belief exemption.
Vaccine laws are statutory. In other words, they are created by a particular state, not the federal government. In my investigations, one topic that initially interested me the most was the amount of vaccine education that a typical medical doctor, especially a pediatrician, receives when he or she is in medical school. Here's what the experts had to say.
Vaccines were not very much discussed in medical school, other than this is what vaccines do. They save lives, they protect people from disease, and this is the schedule you need to use in your pediatric clinics to give to kids. Started medical school in 1983, and it wasn't until 1998 that a mother came over to me and said, "Dr. Larry, did you know that there's mercury in vaccines?" And I said, "No." And instead of just pushing it aside and saying, it's just such a small amount, it doesn't matter, I actually started looking to see what else is in vaccines. And I realized that there's a great amount of material in vaccines that impairs many cell structures and cell functions.
I really didn't think about vaccines very much throughout my career, because I don't know if you know this, but medical doctors really aren't taught anything about what's in vaccines or the contents or the problems that can happen after vaccination. We're basically given a sheet of paper during a pediatric rotation and told this is the schedule and to keep up with it. And so the thinking there is, I just got to make sure that everybody's got the ones that they need and which ones they need, and not really critically thinking about it at all.
I
used to think it was just me because I was an adult internist, but when you look at people like Dr. Larry Pilevsky and Dr. Tony Bark, who actually specialized in pediatrics, and you hear the same thing from them, then you realize that medical schools are not providing this information, and there's no incentive to go and look. You know, there's not a lot of time during residency, so unless something's really a problem, you're not going to go, you know, trying to disprove a well-proven theory or practice. Nobody does it.
I've got a daughter in medical school and a really good friend in medical school, and I've asked them, because they're already being taught vaccines are safe and effective, and they're the best thing you can do to further the health of the population. They're already being taught this. And I was never taught when I was in medical school 30 years ago what was in a vaccine. We were only taught that they're wonderful and do them. So, no, most doctors trained today have no idea what's in the vaccines.
When I went to medical school, I graduated in 1985, and at that period of time, and when I went on into practice, there were only three vaccines, really, that were used in children. There was DPT, MMR, and polio. And it wasn't until 1991 when there was the big ramp up of the vaccine schedule, starting with the hepatitis B vaccine at birth, and then they added the Hib, and then chickenpox and Prevnar, and now we have 46 doses of 16 vaccines that are given to children by the time they're 5 years of age. So I would say that when I was in medical school, there wasn't much to talk about. There was only the three vaccines. But then we had this big ramp up. So anybody who's graduated from medical school and gone through a residency program from 1991 forward, which has been 25 years, the only thing that they're told is here's the schedule and here's how you give it, and you really need to deal with those parents who are doing this whole thing called vaccine hesitancy now.
Dr. Tenpenny just mentioned a term that you may have heard before, vaccine hesitancy. We'll get to that in a moment, but first I want to address the apparent lack of vaccine education that most doctors receive while in medical school. Perhaps things have changed since Dr. Pilevsky and Dr. Tenpenny and Dr. Humphreys attended medical school. I wanted to get an idea of the current courses that a typical medical school student would take while they're at a school like, say, Harvard. The first year includes the following 13 total courses.
Introduction to the profession, the molecular and cellular basis of medicine, the human body, human genetics, patient doctor one, introduction to social medicine and global health, clinical epidemiology and population health, introduction to healthcare policy, scholarship in medicine, physician and community, integrated human physiology, immunology, microbiology and pathology, and medical ethics and professionalism.
It appears that whatever is taught about vaccines and vaccination in Harvard's five-year curriculum is done with one course, immunology, microbiology, and pathology. If you search through the curriculum of dozens of other medical schools in the United States, you'll find that there is not much variation from Harvard. Apparently, vaccines and vaccination are simply not featured prominently. Now, let's go back to what Dr. Tenpenny mentioned earlier. She mentioned the term vaccine hesitancy. Now, what exactly is this? According to the World Health Organization, vaccine hesitancy refers to the delay in acceptance or refusal of vaccines despite availability of vaccination services. Let's listen to Dr. Tenpenny once more to get the full context of her statement.
The only thing that they're told is here's the schedule and here's how you give it, and you really need to deal with those parents who are doing this whole thing called vaccine hesitancy now, which is being published in all of the medical literature, saying that all of these crazy people, why wouldn't they want vaccines? They're actually even combing information off of Facebook of the arguments that people get into and try to come up with arguments to convince more and more people why they should be vaccinated.
In an attempt to have a safer vaccine approach, I did something in 2008 when I started integrative pediatrics that is pretty much unheard of for a pediatrician to do, and that is to one by one give parents the real facts about the vaccine, the benefits of the vaccine, the risks, and the alternatives. So informed consent. And I truly believe this is what doctors should do. We need to get back to doing that if we're doing something to a healthy person. You know, you got a healthy child in front of you and you're saying, well, we're gonna do this thing to you, this vaccine, and it's a good idea. And all they're being told is it's safe and effective, do it. And oh, by the way, if you don't do it, you're gonna have to leave my practice. That's what's happening today. That should be illegal. I mean, if you have a doctor that's telling you to leave your practice if you don't do what I say, that's called paternalism, and we were taught in medical school that is the worst way to practice medicine. And yet the Academy of Pediatrics is now saying that's okay. today, pediatricians are being trained on how to, I would just use the word coerce, their patients into doing all the vaccines.
Why do pediatricians need to convince and coerce parents to vaccinate? Shouldn't parents be presented with the facts and then be able to make up their own mind? Did you know that the AAP, the American Association of Pediatricians, actually has an entire website page dedicated to teaching physicians how to persuade vaccine-hesitant parents? Some parents just want to spread out vaccines, but in the video entitled, Are There Too Many Vaccines?, in order to convince the mother, who's really an actor, that there's no need to spread out vaccines and that that really doesn't give you any additional benefit, the doctor, who's also an actor, refers to a study of over 1,000 children where, quote, researchers found no evidence that getting all the vaccines on time during infancy is associated with any developmental delays.
The study to which she was referring was published in the journal Pediatrics in June of 2010.
Sure enough, here's the conclusion, and I quote, timely vaccination during infancy has no adverse effect on neuropsychological outcomes 7 to 10 years later. These data may reassure parents who are concerned that children receive too many vaccines too soon. That's the actual conclusion. Now, the children studied were born between 1993 and 1997. So let's take a look at the actual vaccine schedule back then. In 1995, prior to 18 months, a typical baby would receive the 3 doses of the Hep B, DPT, Hib, and polio vaccines, as well as the MMR, a total of 13 doses. However, according to the CDC schedule in 2016, by the age of 18 months, a typical child would receive 3 doses of Hep B, 3 doses of rotavirus, 4 doses of DTaP, 4 doses of Hib, 4 doses of pneumococcal, 3 doses of polio vaccine, influenza, and the MMR, varicella, and 2 doses of Hep A, for a total of 26 doses. That's exactly double the doses that were studied in the original study. How can the AAP take a study that concluded that 13 doses had no effect on neuropsychological development and then apply that same study to 26 doses and come to the same conclusion without any further studies? Let me ask you a question. Is it possible that some vaccines work and some vaccines don't? Is it possible that some vaccines cause severe side effects and some don't?
We have to look at vaccines on a vaccine-by-vaccine basis. So saying that you have concerns about the hepatitis B vaccine, about the infant series of the hepatitis B vaccine, which is not based on science, doesn't mean that you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater and you want to do no vaccines ever for any children. That's not what this is about. But what ends up happening is that a parent who says, like I did, a parent who says, I want more information, I don't think I need the hepatitis B vaccine, I'm hepatitis B negative, my husband is too, we've been in a monogamous relationship for 3 years, there's no chance that my child could get exposed to this vaccine, to this disease, is then told, well, you're an anti-vaccine fanatic, how dare you question our science, which, you know, and then is vilified and ridiculed, and then that parent ends up turning away from all vaccines because they've been sort of ostracized by, you know, mainstream medicine.
Another problem that I see out when people talk about vaccines is that it's very convenient to paint all vaccines with the same brush, and we can't do that because the fact of the matter is there are different kinds of vaccines. Some of them have live viruses, some of them have killed viruses, some of them have killed bacteria, some have pieces of bacteria, pieces of virus, and so we have to distinguish, are we talking about a live virus, the influenza vaccine, we talked about pertussis, whooping cough, but we didn't talk about the vaccine, but that's another killed vaccine, a subunit vaccine, and it has particles of the either some of the toxins or some of the pieces of the external bacteria. And so those vaccines don't stimulate immunity on their own. You have to add aluminum to them. Whereas influenza vaccine, you don't have to add aluminum to the influenza vaccine, but most of the other killed vaccines, you do need to add aluminum. And when you do that, what happens is you're stimulating that more of an antibody response than a cell-mediated response. And so those are the people that are going to be more prone to allergies later, and who won't have, that's why you need, you know, when you're a newborn baby at 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, you know, and 1 year, and then again when you're 4 years old, and now we're told that every time a woman is pregnant, she needs to get a pertussis vaccine. Well, that's why, because immunity is really short-lived after those particular vaccines.
Dr. Humphreys just articulated other issues that arise when vaccines are painted with a broad brush. Some vaccines need additives or adjuvants to create the immune response. And there are different types of immune responses. In other words, antibody versus cell mediated. polio and the injected flu vaccines and the DTaP are composed of inactivated kill viruses, while the MMR, measles, mumps, rubella, is composed of a live virus. It's important to remember that there are various types of vaccines, and all of them are different, with different ingredients, different risks, different side effects, different benefits. But let's get back to our focus on the current CDC vaccine schedule, which is one of the things that almost every doctor is taught while in medical school. When I was a baby in 1968, I think I got about 3 or 4 vaccines in total, and I was considered to be fully vaccinated. But in order to be fully vaccinated today, it's much different.
What we have now is 69 doses of 16 vaccines that the federal government is saying everybody should, all the children should use from day of birth to age 18. Back when my children were receiving vaccines in the late 70s and 80s, it was 23 doses of 7 vaccines. So we've had a tripling of the numbers of doses of vaccines that children are now getting. And in that time period, as this dramatic escalation of the child vaccination schedule has occurred, what have we seen? Have we seen children be healthier? Just the opposite. We have an epidemic of chronic disease and disability. 1 child in 6 in America now learning disabled. 1 in 9 with asthma. 1 in 50 with autism. 1 in 400 developing diabetes. Millions more with inflammatory bowel disorders, rheumatoid arthritis, epilepsy. Epilepsy is on the rise. We have children who, 30% now of young adults have been diagnosed as having a mental illness, anxiety disorder, bipolar, schizophrenia. This is the worst public health report card in the history of this country. And it has coincided perfectly with the tripling of the numbers of vaccines.
If a pediatrician does not abide by the standards of vaccination and promulgate them, then they themselves become legally liable for being sued. So even if they're open and they're like, oh, well, she doesn't want to vaccinate according to the schedule, and then someone actually gets injured or gets an infection, then they themselves could be legally liable. Whereas they are completely expunged of all liability if they follow without any thought the vaccine schedule.
When I was a kid, I got smallpox vaccine and I got polio vaccine and that was it. My kids received 69 doses of 16 vaccines.
A typical 2-month-old baby will be getting as many as 9 vaccines at once. I mean, it may not be 9 injections, but it's 9 vaccines. I mean,
they can be at once.
They can be getting a hepatitis B, diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, polio, Haemophilus influenza B, pneumococcal, rotavirus, and I might be missing one.
I'm pro-vaccine. I had all 6 of my kids vaccinated. I think vaccines have saved millions of lives, and I just accepted the dogma that they were safe and that's what the science said. I started looking at the science, and I started calling people within the agencies. I called Paul Offit, who was a big defender of vaccines, and I called Kathleen Stratton at CDC and other people within the agencies, and I started questioning them, and their answers, they gave me the answers that they gave to the public, but I was informed about the science. And when I started drilling down with them on the science, it was clear that not only that the science they were citing me was bogus, but that they knew that it was weak and they were unwilling to defend it in front of informed criticism. And that shocked me because these were not, I was used to environmental agencies becoming captured, but a public health agency that is charged with protecting the health of our children to lie about science and to manipulate science, which is what they were doing, just seemed criminal.
There was a study published in Pediatrics that showed that parents who decided to delay or forego some vaccines were parents who made over $70,000 a year and had the most education. So why is it that the best educated parents who have the highest socioeconomic income are choosing to delay some vaccines? It it's not because something is wrong with those parents, it's because something is wrong with the current CDC vaccine schedule. I'll tell you an industry-kept secret, which is that a lot of doctors in America are choosing not to vaccinate their children on the current CDC schedule. Almost every doctor I've interviewed has chosen an alternative schedule for their children that is based on better health and better science. It's a really well-kept secret that the people working at the CDC are also alternating the vaccine schedule for their own children. How do I know that? I know that because I've talked to them. So I had someone who was an active, very, very vocal spokesperson for the current vaccine schedule who confided in me that that person did not do the hepatitis B vaccine, because when that person looked at all of the data, that person realized that it wasn't a good idea. So here we have public health officials screaming from the rooftops that parents must do this vaccine schedule exactly as it is put out by the CDC, while themselves in their own families are choosing not to follow it. Whenever I have a doctor who I talk to who says I alternate the schedule, I say, would you share that? Can I use your name? And they say, I don't want to lose my job, you know, or I don't want people to know, or I'm choosing not to do these vaccines because I know they're not effective, or I know they're not necessary, but you can't let anybody know. And I'm a journalist, and I'm bound to journalistic ethics, and I could never reveal who those people are, but I can tell you that I have spoken to them myself. And they have told me the truth. And the truth is that they are alternating the schedule in their own families for their own children.
Why would CDC employees not follow their own vaccine schedule? Why would pediatricians not follow their own vaccine recommendations to their own patients? In medical schools across the globe, physicians are taught that the current CDC schedule has been proven to be safe and effective.
In 2013, the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Sciences, issued a report that said that the current federally recommended child vaccine schedule of 49 doses of 14 vaccines given between day of birth and age 6 has not been adequately studied for safety. And one of the issues was that the vaccines may have been studied separately, but they have not been studied in the combined schedule, including giving 8 to 10 vaccines on one day. So that is something the Institute of Medicine has acknowledged. The federal government disagrees, but I think everybody needs to understand that child vaccine schedule has not been adequately studied for safety. Fewer than 40 studies have actually studied the schedule. That's not enough studies to prove that that schedule is safe or effective.
Plus, there hasn't been any, there haven't been any studies at looking at the synergistic effects of the ingredients. So if you have one metal, what does it do to the body? If you have one metal and another metal, what does that do to the body? If you have one metal and antibiotics, what does that do to the body? And it's already been shown that metal detoxification in the presence of antibiotics is diminished versus metal detoxification without antibiotics. You have metal, metal, antibiotic, then you have microorganism. What is the synergistic effect of that? So none of those amplified studies, or the look at the amplification of one ingredient's effect on another, have ever been done.
The studies in this book, Miller's Review of Critical Vaccine Studies, this book, there's 400 studies in here. And these are studies, most of these studies are recent studies. These are all studies that are showing problems with vaccines, because I got tired of hearing medical doctors saying there are no studies that show that vaccines are a problem, that vaccines are unsafe. What are you talking about? That is an outright lie. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of studies published in peer-reviewed journals documenting safety and efficacy problems associated with vaccines.
The consensus around vaccines is just like tobacco science. You know, would we have fought for tobacco science? There was a time when every doctor was saying smoking cigarettes is good for you, or at least it's not bad for you. I mean, that existed, and the industry was just paying for tons and tons of science to be done that supported that issue. That's what's happening in vaccines.
Back in the 50s, doctors were promoting this brand, right, Smoke Camel or whatever, and doctors were telling you, it's good, it'll relax you, it'll help you. The tobacco companies back then knew. They had their own data. They knew that tobacco was a carcinogen, that there were problems. And once we did the huge studies, followed millions of people over years, decades, I mean, everybody today knows, right? I mean, everybody knows tobacco is a leading killer. We need to do those same sorts of studies for vaccine.
We do need to do more studies on vaccines and more testing. While the CDC recommends polio, hepatitis B, diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, rotavirus, Haemophilus influenza type B, and pneumococcal vaccines for 2-, 4-, and 6-month-old infants, this combination of 8 vaccines administered during a single physician visit was never tested for safety in clinical trials. In addition, the CDC report entitled Mixed Exposures Research Agenda states exactly the opposite and concluded that mixed exposures to chemicals, including pharmaceuticals and stress factors, may produce unexpected deleterious health effects. In the executive summary, we read this, and this is a quote, exposures to mixed stressors can produce health consequences that are additive, synergistic, antagonistic, or can potentiate the response expected from individual component measures. Did you know that since the late 1980s, vaccine manufacturers cannot be sued?
The vaccine makers have been protected by Congress under the Vaccine Injury Act. The anger and the rage that whites in my audiences I've attended, blacks and Latino mothers, they said, wait a minute, we can't sue them. I mean, even those that I have met that are pro-vaccine, when you let them know that the vaccine makers cannot be sued, even they said, wait a minute, I'm against what you're here for, but I ain't for that. You telling me that I can't sue the vaccine makers if it's proven that vaccine injured my child? I said, no. They're indemnified. You can't touch them.
One of the first red flags that scares me the most about vaccines is that they remove any potential for litigation against any damage from vaccines. What that tells you is that they don't have the science set up properly. The original vaccinations, the toxins or whatever they wanted to call them, to try to put a tiny little bit of a disease into you so that that would get your immune system to become aware of that and used to that and then therefore fight it off and be stronger. That principle is actually a fairly sound principle. But when it came to making money and getting everyone to get vaccinated for all manner of things when it wasn't required, it became a money scheme. As children, we were injected with all manner of poisons. I remember when I was a kid, I couldn't figure it out. One day my eye drooped. Remember my eye drooping? Well, directly related to a vaccination. My eye drooped permanently. Vaccinations are irresponsible the way that they're done. If they were responsible, if they made absolutely sure that there was no possibility of a negative side effect, and that if they didn't do their due diligence properly, that they could be litigated against, fair is fair. They don't do those things. There's so many red flags around vaccinations.
You have the vaccine manufacturers pretending that they were having production problems and going to Congress and saying, we need to upgrade our plant, our physical plant, to make more of this, but we're not going to spend the money because we're getting sued. And if we're going to get sued, if we're going to spend the money to make a product to get sued, it doesn't make sense for us business-wise. We're dropping out of the vaccine business. And all of the vaccine manufacturers went to Congress and told them, we're dropping out of the business unless you do something to make it so that we can stay in the business, which is where the Vaccine Compensation Program, the Vaccine Act, the Vaccine Court, the things that you've heard so many things about around this area over the past few days, that's where the whole idea came from. It came from the manufacturers who could no longer defend themselves. And Congress saying we need to protect the vaccine supply.
I think the choice at that time was was not an irrational choice by Congress given the alternatives that they were presented. And the alternative was that I think the calculus was based upon the idea that at that point there was so much litigation against the vaccine companies that the pharmaceutical industry was considering abandoning vaccines altogether. So Congress, and I think vaccine companies went to Congress and said, we're going to stop making vaccines, and that's going to be a national security problem, because if there's a bioterrorism attack, or, you know, if there is an epidemic, there's going to be no factories that are up and running that can create new vaccines that can respond to those national emergencies. And so if you want us to continue to make vaccines, you're going to have to give us immunity from litigation. And that's what happened.
If you're a surgeon, you can't go into the OR without liability insurance. What business do you know is allowed to practice and offer its service without liability insurance?
And what product that carries a risk of injury or death, what other product is mandated to be used by every single person born in this country multiple times? And there's no liability for anybody.
The vaccine industry has absolute legal immunity. They, in other words, they push all the risks of their toxic interventions onto the individuals, the families, the moms and dads. They take no risk whatsoever. And you know why? Because they have legal immunity, and it means they have no reason to have quality control. They could put, if they wanted to, they could put radioactive cesium-137 into a vaccine and inject people with it and cause you cancer, and they would have absolute no liability whatsoever. They could put anything in a vaccine. And to some extent, they do. They put known neurotoxins in the vaccines. It's criminal. It's criminal what they do to our fellow human beings.
The National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act that our organization worked on to try to get safety provisions in that law says that your doctor is supposed to keep a permanent record of every vaccine and lot number given. Your doctor is supposed to write down in a child's permanent medical record if there is a health problem that occurs that's serious, hospitalization, an injury, and report it to the Federal Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System.
With no responsibility and legal immunity, basically, the companies that manufacture vaccines have no reason to have quality control. They literally can put whatever they want into vaccines. Barbara Lowe Fisher's nonprofit organization, the National Vaccine Information Center, worked with Congress to pass the National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act of 1986. This law included a centralized vaccine reaction reporting system, the Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, or VAERS, VAERS, which is jointly operated by the Federal Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, and the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC. Let's have a listen to a few experts discussing the topic of adverse reactions to vaccines.
In the United States, we have the VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, and this is the system that doctors or patients, anybody, can report a possible vaccine reaction to. The reason it doesn't work is this, Ty. I'm a pediatrician. I should be seeing all these vaccine reactions, right? And you ask any pediatrician, how many vaccine reactions have you seen? I haven't seen any. I mean, a little bit of redness where the shot's given and some fever, we expect that. But no, I haven't seen any reactions. How can that be? Well, either there are no reactions or we don't know what to look for. I think it's the latter. So here's the thing. Kids will have seizures after vaccines and we'll say, oh, well, that's normal. Because you can have febrile seizures and that's a normal thing. We're taught that febrile seizures are normal. And are they? I don't know. Let's look at the unvaccinated and the vaccinated. Let's follow them and see, do the unvaccinated have febrile seizures as well? SIDS. I'm trained to think that that's just normal. We don't know what causes it, but it's normal. Well, let's look at the unvaccinated and the vaccinated and see if they both have the same amount of SIDS. Neurological problems, autism, which remembers the tip of the iceberg. What about all the ADD, the ADHD, the autism spectrum, the anxiety and the depression that we're seeing? And we're not even talking about all the autoimmune stuff we're starting to see at higher levels, diabetes type 1, and we're seeing way more allergies and eczema, and you're hearing more and more about people with peanut allergies that have to carry EpiPens around. Would that still be in that unvaccinated arm? Would they have all those same, you know, levels of these disorders, these chronic diseases that we're seeing in kids? I'd love to see this study be done. That's what we need to do.
I think there's a government-industry collaboration to promote vaccination. We know that government sees itself primarily as the promoters of the vaccine program. And they're supposed to also warn us about the risk. And by the way, they're supposed to, under the law, the legislation, the Vaccine Act, publicize the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. We know from a recent report from the Government Accountability Office that the people who are pushing the vaccines did not want to publicize it because they thought that conflicted. That's not me saying that. That's Congress. Congress commissioned a report. They said that. So they intentionally did not publicize the vaccine program. By the way, it's my statutory obligation as a lawyer who does this to promote the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. So we can consider this interview as promoting the statutory purpose of the Vaccine Act. And everyone in our country, especially the doctors who don't know how to recognize vaccine injury, should know that there's a vaccine injury compensation program, should be familiar with the types of injuries that occur, and be receptive to it, and report it to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System so that we can monitor what's going on. That's not happening.
What we see on VIRS is not one-tenth of the injury, which is what the government says. The government says it's probably one-tenth, right? It's probably 1/1,000. And I say that because I didn't know to report to VIRS. I ran a pediatric emergency room. I trained in pediatrics.
And you didn't know you're supposed to report vaccine injuries?
No. And we had in our ear when I was a medical student, a resident, and running the ER, we certainly saw kids, and I would moonlight at other hospitals even, that came in who had stopped breathing or had seizures after they'd been in the vaccine clinic. Nobody reported that. Nobody went and said this has to be reported.
Didn't even know.
No. It was kind of like we knew that happened. Okay. But they didn't get reported. So think how many don't get reported.
Doctors are not taught what a vaccine adverse reaction looks like. In fact, when a parent calls the doctor and says, my child was vaccinated, I can't wake him up. He'll only wake up to feed. He's sleeping for 2 days. The parent is told that's normal. And when the parent raises the question, could this have been from the vaccine? Meanwhile, the kid had never done that before. The doctor almost unanimously says, no, it's just a coincidence. That kid suffered brain damage. Sleeping for 2 days as an infant, not waking up other than to feed, that kid was brain damaged. Had brain inflammation. Not waking up for 2 days other than to feed is a neurological event. That's not normal. And that's from the injection of material into the brain.
1989 is the year that this epidemic of childhood illnesses began, autism, ASD, ADD, ADHD, speech delay, language delay, tics, something called misery disorder, which I've never heard of before. Tics is Tourette's syndrome and a family of grave neurological injuries that became epidemic that year. SIDS, narcolepsy, seizure disorders, things that, and of course food allergies and asthma, and all of those things began in 1989. On all of those illnesses, there's science today, there's science out there that indicates that those illnesses are being caused by thimerosal or adjuvants like aluminum or squalene or some other vaccine association.
Something is happening to the brains of our children. Something is interfering with the normal neurosequencing of brain development. Because when babies are born, their brain is not developed. When babies are born, they have more nerve cells than their brains need. And it's through life experience that the tracks are laid down to create the proper sequencing of muscular development, speech development, cognitive development, and emotional development. Something is interfering with the proper sequence of those steps. Something is getting in the way of the brain developing properly. No one is asking the question, why? Why are so many kids having an interference of the proper sequencing of brain development? Why, as of January 2016, are we seeing one out of every 20 children under the age of five with a seizure disorder?
Yeah, I believe that it's clear that the vaccines were the beginning of my downward spiral in my health, which became sort of a lifelong issue as far as bronchial asthma, as well as other health issues that emerged. So it was a very personal journey for me and advocacy, because I wanted to see, is the literature supporting the view that there are this many adverse effects that could occur? And it turned out, after spending 10 years looking at the research, I've got all of it on my website, there's actually over 200 adverse health effects that have been documented caused by vaccines in the schedule today.
VAERS. That's the acronym for Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. The name itself implies that vaccines are not totally safe because of the fact that there are admitted adverse reactions. After the legislation was passed that exempted vaccine manufacturers from liability, there was still a small loophole in the law that allowed for manufacturers to be sued. But even that small loophole was closed in 2011 with a Supreme Court decision.
You could still sue a manufacturer if you could show the manufacturer could have made a safer vaccine. In 2011, a case went to the Supreme Court, Brucewitz versus Wyeth. It was a DPT vaccine injury case. And the lawyers representing the pharmaceutical industry, government and medical trade convinced the Supreme Court that there should be no liability at all for the pharmaceutical industry when it comes to vaccines that are licensed by the FDA as safe and effective. The Supreme Court majority, with two dissents, Justices Sotomayor and Ginsburg dissented. The Supreme Court said vaccines are unavoidably unsafe, and there shall be no more lawsuits against any vaccine company.
So legally, they're classified as unavoidably unsafe. That's their legal classification. And when I say that in court in these state, you know, cases that I have, which are not injury, obviously that's federal court. The judges always stop me and go, "What? What did you say? Right, repeat that. And I'm like, "They're legally classified as unavoidably unsafe, Your Honor." And then they're like, "Whoa, wait a minute."
So today, if you or your child are injured by a vaccine, or your child dies from a vaccine, you cannot hold anyone accountable in a civil court of law. Anyone who makes and sells the vaccine, who regulates the vaccine, and who makes policy for the vaccine, who votes to mandate for the vaccine, or who gives the vaccine. The only one who's left with any responsibility of what happens to a child after that child's injured by a vaccine is the parent.
My son sustained a permanent brain damage. So there's a big inner struggle, because you see that your child struggles with basic things that most children can easily do, that is learn language, learn how to speak, learn how to tell colors, comprehend more complex issues. So yeah, you do have guilt, but at the same time, if you didn't know in advance,